the case of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine! You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Stay tuned.
Good evening to everyone attending here for our webinar here tonight, BDS 101, How to Join the Movement. My name is Tom Woodley. I'm the president of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, CJPME. We're so happy to have folks here tonight. This event here tonight was actually inspired by a request from one of our local chapters. This local group wanted to do more BDS work, but they felt they needed a little bit more coaching and support materials. So our event this evening has been highly popular, and so apparently this is something that many people are feeling in terms of needing a little bit more coaching and encouragement and more materials and support. During tonight's event, we'll be getting an overview from an expert on the BDS movement. We'll also hear from an official representative of the BDS movement. We'll also provide some practical ways for you to get started with BDS. Our event will be split into two parts. In the first part of the webinar, we'll have Michael Bookert, whom I'll introduce in a moment, will present some of the basics of the BDS movement. Then Michael will introduce Olivia Catby-Smith. She's the North American representative of the Palestinian-run BDS National Committee, and he'll get her to talk a little bit more about the movement overall. Second portion of the evening will be dedicated to Q&A. Just a word about CJPME before I invite Michael to begin. CJPME is an organization whose mission is to empower Canadians of all backgrounds to promote justice, development, and peace in the Middle East. We do a whole variety of things, advocacy campaigns, policy analysis, speaking tours, training, lobbying to politicians, and many other things. We have over 100,000 adherents across Canada with local volunteers to help us in virtually all of Canada's major cities. So now it's my pleasure to introduce our first presenter here tonight, Dr. Michael Bookert. Michael has his PhD in sociology with a specialization in political economy from Carleton University. His dissertation compared the opposition to the BDS movement to opposition to the boycott of South Africa during apartheid South Africa. And he'll address that briefly this evening. Michael has published in Radical History Review and Studies in Political Economy and has written for publications including Jacobin and Briar Patch. His research has also been cited in the Washington Post, BuzzFeed News, CBC Ottawa, and the South African Broadcast Corporation. He's held several positions in the student movement, given he was a student for quite a while, including as president of the Carleton University Graduate Students Association. He joined CJPME as vice president in June 2020. So please join me tonight in welcoming Dr. Michael Bookert.
Thank you, Tom, so much. Really good to be here. So obviously we're talking about BDS. It's the international movement which urges the use of boycotts, divestment, and sanctions against Israel in order to pressure Israel to comply with international law. BDS is a movement that was launched in 2005, endorsed at the time by 170 Palestinian civil society organizations. It is an invitation from Palestinians to the international community to join their struggle for justice. And it's also a set of pressure tactics, specifically boycotts, which is what you can do as a consumer in your own personal shopping. It is divestment, which is something that you can do perhaps in your community, perhaps you're a labor union member and your pension fund has investments, or perhaps you are a member of a church that has investments in different companies, or perhaps you're a student on campus that has an endowment fund that has invested stocks in the occupation. So those are the first two. And then there's also sanctions, which is what government does, but we still have a role as citizens to pressure our politicians to take action, to impose real meaningful, concrete action against Israel to force it to change its behavior. So one key thing to remember is that BDS didn't come from just nowhere. It is essentially a creative new approach after decades of inaction by the international community in the face of impunity by Israel. BDS came out of a recognition that previous approaches by the international community had failed. They had failed to modify Israel's behavior, and they had failed to improve the situation for Palestinians in any meaningful way. Israel has ignored countless UN resolutions calling on Israel to change its policies. Israel ignored the decision by the International Court of Justice in 2004, which found that the wall it was building in the West Bank was illegal. And the peace process and the emphasis on negotiations has not ended Israel's occupation, nor has it forced Israel to stop settlement expansion or other violations of human rights and international law. In this context, the launch of BDS was the inevitable next step. Considering the failure of all other approaches, BDS allows ordinary people to take action into our own hands and use the methods available to us to try to do something to force Israel's compliance with international law. Now, there are three core objectives to BDS which give focus and direction to the movement. And these are really important. So first, these are objectives. BDS is intended to be imposed until Israel complies with international law in these three specific ways. So first, ending Israel's occupation and colonization of all Arab lands and dismantling the wall. Two is recognizing the fundamental rights of the Arab Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality. And three is respecting, protecting, and promoting the rights of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and properties as stipulated by UN Resolution 194. Now, this is really important for a couple of reasons. The BDS movement is not just a response to the occupation, but it's a response to the injustices faced by all Palestinians, including those under occupation, those who are second-class citizens in Israel, and those who are refugees. All of these segments of the Palestinian people experience injustice on behalf of the Israeli apartheid state. And all of these struggles are equally important. And so that's why it's important to foreground these. It also implies that BDS is not meant to go on forever. But once Israel's injustices end, so will the BDS movement. This is in the same way that the South African anti-apartheid movement ended as soon as apartheid came to an end and South Africa extended democracy to all. Now, I don't have a lot of time to get into this into detail, but I just wanted to show this flyer from CJPME, which you can download, that shows that the BDS objectives are not fringe or far out there, but they're consistent with principles of both international law and official Canadian policy. When it comes to Israel's occupation, the importance of equality, the rights of refugees, all of these things are consistent with international law and official Canadian policy. And if you're more interested in this, you can download this from our resource page on the website, which I'll talk about more later. Now, CJPME adopted the BDS call pretty early on and encourages Canadians of all backgrounds to get involved. There are some advantages to BDS compared to other strategies that you might take to show the injustice of Israel's human rights violations. One is that BDS is really, it's easy to participate. There are actions that you can take yourself as a consumer, as a labor member, as a church member, as a student in your own community. They're flexible. How exactly you implement these BDS actions ultimately depends on the local context and what makes sense and what is most strategic in your community. It's peaceful. It's a method of nonviolent resistance. It's taking the lead from Palestinians themselves, and it's Israel's weak point. Israel relies on a tremendous amount of external support, and it is exceptionally concerned about its reputation. And therefore, by targeting these, BDS has it's looking at its weak point. And it's time for our conversation with Olivia Cappy-Smith. So I invite Olivia to turn on your camera. I am delighted to introduce everyone to Olivia Cappy-Smith. Olivia is the North American coordinator for the BDS movement. Olivia also organizes with Democratic Socialists for America of America, the largest socialist organization in the US. She served as the co-chair of the Portland, Oregon chapter of DSA from 2017 to 2021. She was part of a group that wrote and passed a resolution endorsing BDS at DSA's 2017 National Convention. And she helped found the National BDS and Palestine Solidarity Working Group in that organization. She's been involved in many BDS and Palestine solidarity campaigns, as well as labor organizing and anti-fascist and anti-racist organizing in Portland. So hi, Olivia.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. And thank you everyone for being here.
So maybe Olivia, if you could just tell us a little bit about how you came to be involved in the BDS movement.
Yeah, so I am originally from rural Ohio. I'm half Arab. My dad is from Jordan originally. And so I always knew about Palestine, but didn't really think of myself as an activist or even really see an opening for me to get involved in any sort of political or human rights work growing up. The first action I went to was in Chicago. In the summer of 2014 when the assault on Gaza was occurring. And there were 20, 30,000 people in the streets of Chicago, and I was just blown away. So I was paying more attention to Palestine at that point and realized kind of how terrible every politician in the US was on this issue, you know, Republicans and Democrats alike. And I thought, well, this is just the way it is. And then the 2016 primary started happening and Bernie Sanders came along and he had the nerve to say Palestinians deserved dignity and rights. And he was also saying a lot of other good things that I cared about, like healthcare and education. And he was calling himself a Democratic Socialist. So I joined the Democratic Socialists of America. And through DSA, I just became so much more educated on capitalism and imperialism and the intersections of all these different struggles. And in DSA, I immediately got connected with a group that was working to pass a BDS resolution at the next national convention, which we did overwhelmingly. And in my chapter in Portland, we run a few different campaigns, most notably a campaign to get our NBA team, the Portland Trailblazers, to end a PR sponsorship they had with Leupold and Stevens, which is a company that supplies sniper scopes to Israeli snipers. And we won that campaign. So through my involvement in BDS campaigns, just as a DSA member, I got connected with folks in Palestine at the BDS National Committee and started as the North America coordinator for the BDS movement about a year ago. And so I very much enjoyed getting to know the lay of the land in Canada as well with groups like CJPME who are doing such great work.
Well, it's been really great to be able to work with you for the last few months. And really excited about the more coordination between solidarity groups here and the BDS committee. But what is the BDS committee? What is the BDS National Committee exactly that you are a part of?
Yeah, so the Palestinian BDS National Committee is the broadest Palestinian civil society coalition that works to lead and support the BDS movement for Palestinian rights. As I'm sure a lot of you know, the BDS call was issued in 2005 by over 170 Palestinian organizations. And those organizations are very much representative of the three major components of the Palestinian people. So Palestinian refugees in exile, Palestinians living under occupation in the West Bank and Gaza, and the Palestinian citizens of the Israeli state. So after the BDS call was issued in 2005, the efforts to coordinate the BDS campaign were really taking off and culminated in a Palestinian BDS conference in November 2007. And out of that conference, the BDS National Committee was formed as the Palestinian coordinating body for the BDS campaign worldwide.
So what does that mean to coordinate the BDS movement? That it seems like BDS is composed of lots of people doing lots of things. How does BDS National Committee take a leadership role?
Yeah, the BNC's kind of mandate and role is to formulate strategies and programs of action and to really serve as the Palestinian reference point for BDS campaigns, both in the Arab world and worldwide. So the BNC has offices in Palestine, and we also have staff in many different parts of the world. So there's a North America coordinator, me. There's also a Latin America coordinator, a Europe coordinator, a South Asia coordinator, an Arab world coordinator, an international campaigns officer. You know, we have staff that coordinate these geographically specific and context specific campaigns. And we answer to the Palestinian Civil Society Coalition that issued the BDS call. So it's not just, you know, a leaderless movement. It's very much led by Palestinian civil society. And we look to the BNC for direction on how to engage in these campaigns.
So you talked a bit about how the BDS National Committee sort of is representative of all these different sections of civil society. But what about politicians, like Palestinian political parties? Do they support BDS and does that matter?
So Palestinian political parties, as well as trade unions and human rights organizations and grassroots organizations, all support BDS. Something like 86% of all Palestinians support BDS, so it's very much broadly supported. On the political parties question specifically, as a sort of consensus-based coalition that leads the BDS movement and brings together all of Palestinian civil society, the BNC intentionally does not have any sort of like institutional relationship with any Palestinian political party or other political party. There is the coalition of Palestinian political parties that is included in the BNC. So the political parties in Palestine are in a coalition, and that coalition has a seat in the BNC. But by design, the BNC does not include any specific political party to avoid being influenced by any party ideology or political agenda. And as I'm sure many of you know, the BDS movement is an explicitly nonviolent movement that advocates only peaceful forms of resistance to Israel's regime of oppression.
So would you say that, I mean, it seemed like when BDS started, it was almost a way of breaking the impasse politically of civil society speaking up and raising their voice and kind of getting around the lack of action from the specific the political leaders at the time. Do you think that's changed? Have political leaders come on board?
Yeah, like I said, there was a recent poll that shows 86% of Palestinians support BDS. So I absolutely think that it is broadly supported. I know that it's broadly supported in Palestine. In terms of like Palestinians supporting BDS, I also just want to add to this. A question we get a lot is, it's really in bad faith, but BDS hurts Palestinians and BDS hurts Palestinian workers. And that's very patronizing and just insulting. You know, the BDS call is coming from Palestinian workers. All of the main trade unions in Palestine have called for BDS. And so what hurts Palestinian workers is apartheid and occupation. You know, Palestinians face high unemployment. They are often forced to work for Israeli companies, including in illegal Israeli settlements because of Israel's very deliberate destruction of the Palestinian economy. Palestinian workers are often paid far less than Israelis working the same jobs, and often don't have the same like basic rights in the workplace and safety and social security. So, you know, this critique is almost always made in bad faith anyway. But for anyone with a genuine concern that Palestinians, you know, they should work to end apartheid and occupation.
Well, it's funny when you know, when that critique comes up, I always think it's funny because it was one of the main tactics used by defenders of South Africa during apartheid to say, well, this boycott is going to hurt Black workers in South Africa. And what we actually need to do is support economic growth. And then this will eventually lead to the end of apartheid while also supporting Black workers. But of course, yeah, it's very patronizing. It ignores the fact that it was the African National Congress, all these other labor groups and civil society groups that were all demanding that the international take this action, that they all participate in boycotts. So it's so funny to see those same arguments. But I wanted to ask, I mentioned some of the things that I think about as advantages of BDS. Are there any more that you would like to highlight? Why should we get involved? Why should we put our energy into BDS?
Yeah, this is a really great question. And I think there are a lot of reasons why BDS is a good strategy. I think BDS is effective first because it has really shifted power. As you mentioned, you know, there is this farce of a peace process and has really sucked energy away. And BDS has really fundamentally transformed the international solidarity movement for justice in Palestine. So we can have a mass amount of people, not just, you know, expressing solidarity in the abstract and sympathy, but actually have tangible action in the form of these campaigns. And, you know, it kind of puts the impetus on all of us to end the ways in which our local communities are implicated in Israeli aggression, because there are a lot of ways. I think it also forces the BDS also forces the international solidarity movement to like actually be accountable to the huge amount of Palestinian organizations behind the BDS call. So in that way, the solidarity grows from the demands of Palestinians rather than the sort of like colonial mentality of knowing what is best for Palestinians. There's also a big educational piece to it, which I have definitely found working on BDS campaigns. For those of us who are outside of Palestine, I think BDS takes something that is happening across the world and really makes it a local issue, so it can't be ignored. As I'm sure you know, BDS campaigns very often create controversy, and that can be good. That gets media attention, and it really forces people to learn more about it and have to take a side on a campaign that directly affects them, especially because so many BDS campaigns, like I said, happen in these local contexts or, you know, within your union or your church, and you kind of have to learn about the issue in order to take a position. I think BDS really helps us as campaigners tell the story of what's happening in Palestine and really change the discourse by focusing on the specific complicity. And even campaigns that don't necessarily reach their ultimate goal are often just a success in building this awareness around Palestine. And I think last, but definitely not least, is we do BDS campaigns because they work. You know, in addition to this media attention and education and changing the discourse, there have been so many BDS victories over the years. And I think by demanding an end to complicity and demanding accountability for Israel's violations of Palestinian rights, BDS really changes the incentive structure for Israel and for every complicit institution. And so it's a really powerful way to campaign for Palestinian rights.
Now, you mentioned controversy a little while ago. Are there any challenges that the BDS movement faces that you've noticed in the last few years?
Oh, just a few. I mean, I think everyone knows that the biggest challenge that we face is this onslaught of repression and attacks from Israel and from Israel's allies like the United States. You know, I'm based in the US, so in the US and elsewhere, there are anti-BDS laws being passed. There are attacks and blacklists for student organizers, not just in the US, but I know in Canada and, mm-hmm. and in Europe and globally. They have attempted to paint BDS as anti-Semitic, you know, as this acronym that you cannot touch. I myself had several articles written about me even before I was with the BNC. I was just a random activist in Portland being smeared in the Times of Israel. Like, it's a lot of repression and attacks. But we're also seeing the tide changing a lot now. And that stuff doesn't hurt people in the same way anymore. In the US, for example, with the rise of the Democratic Socialists of America, we now have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Cori Bush, who are members of Congress, who are no longer scared to say that they support BDS. And that's huge. And it's because people are now seeing through these attacks and seeing that what Israel is doing to Palestinians is horrendous, and that BDS is a legitimate human rights-based movement in a way that we can all take action. And that's a threat to Israel. You know, Israel and its supporters are obviously very threatened by this movement, and they're obviously unable to outright defend apartheid, defend occupation. So they resort to these attacks and these top-down draconian laws and measures to try to really muzzle Palestine advocacy. But I think that, you know, like I said, the tide is changing. I think these laws and different measures to repress the movement are really out of touch with public opinion. You know, I think CJPME actually did a poll in Canada that showed how much BDS support for BDS is growing. So these attempts at repression really show how powerful and successful the movement has become. And that is why Israel and its defenders are so afraid of it. So, you know, in the face of these attacks, I would say do not back down. That is exactly what we need to keep the pressure on.
Well, there's so many things I want to pick up on there, but there are a few more things I'd like to talk about for the workshop. So if you don't mind sticking around for the Q&A, perhaps we can have more of a discussion at that point. But thanks so much, Olivia. And we'll see you in a few minutes. So I'm going to get back to the presentation. So what we wanted to do for a few minutes was to talk a little bit, go into some detail specifically about consumer boycotts, things that are very easy for individuals to participate in as they involve one's own consumption choices and things that you do, you know, things that you can do to modify the things that you're buying and consuming, obviously. So there's a few ways that you can get involved in a consumer boycott. One is that, or there's a couple different kind of targets. So one type of target is those that are products that are made by any company, whether they're Israeli, Canadian, or otherwise, that participates in some way in Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories. This could be because they have facilities that are in the occupied West Bank, in a settlement, or perhaps they sell products directly to the Israeli government or the Israeli military, or perhaps they're even complicit in some of the technologies of repression, like the wall that goes through the West Bank, or perhaps they produce drones and that kind of thing. So that's one type of target that you can boycott. However, the official BDS movement does promote a full boycott of Israeli companies that are complicit in Israeli oppression, and not just those that are in the settlements. And this is because Israeli society as a whole is really tied up in the issue of the settlements and issue of all sorts of oppression of the Palestinian people. Again, our concern is not just with the occupation, but with second class status in Israel and with refugees. And so therefore it makes sense to focus efforts on all sorts of Israeli companies. However, strategically speaking, and in a practical sense, often BDS focuses on a smaller subset of companies, usually ones that have a very clear and direct link to various types of oppression, and often where we're most able to make a difference. And so maybe I'll go over a couple of different examples of major boycott victories over the past couple of decades. One, there's SodaStream, which you may have heard about. It's a company, an Israeli company that produces these products that create carbonated water at home. And they've been operating for years a factory in an Israeli settlement in the West Bank. And so for this reason, was subject to a targeted boycott campaign. And in 2014, after years of pressure, SodaStream announced that it was closing its factory in the settlement and moving across the Green Line into Israel proper. SodaStream also announced that a flagship retail store in the UK was shut down because BDS protesters were picketing outside of that store. And so this targeted campaign led to SodaStream clearly deciding that it wasn't worth being involved in the settlement and picking it up and moving it out of the occupied territories. Now, SodaStream is an interesting case because they like to boast that their factories employ both Israeli and Palestinian workers and that they're treated equally without discrimination. And you say that as a reason for why you shouldn't boycott SodaStream. However, the company still operates in and benefits from a context in which its Israeli employees have full equal rights, and its Palestinian employees, they go home and they don't have the same rights. They're either under occupation, under military martial law, or they're second class citizens. So SodaStream is still subject to a boycott call. A very similar campaign was that against Ahava Dead Sea Cosmetics. For years, Ahava was boycotted because its factory was located in an illegal West Bank settlement and because its product line was actually using natural resources from the occupied Palestinian territories, a theft of natural resources. So after intense boycott pressure, a number of distributors were actually starting to drop the product. I think even the Hudson Bay Company in 2011 stopped selling Ahava products. And finally, in 2016, they announced that they were going to be moving their factory outside of the West Bank and into Israel proper. So those are some victories. I want to talk about a few current boycott targets. One is Pillsbury, which I'm sure lots of people are familiar with. Pillsbury is actually subject to a boycott because they have a factory located in the Adirot Industrial Park. And you can actually see on this map right here, that's deep into East Jerusalem near Ramallah and surrounded by Palestinian villages. So that's an illegal settlement. And for this reason, General Mills, which owns Pillsbury, actually found itself called out by the United Nations and added to the UN's database of companies that operate in the illegal settlements. This is a database that first was launched last year. So therefore, because of this being called up by the United Nations, it becomes a particularly good choice for a targeted boycott campaign. And I will talk a bit more about boycotting Pillsbury in a few minutes. The second one is Sabra Hummus. Sabra is on the BDS list because one of its major owners is the Israeli company, the Strauss Group. And that company is a financial supporter of the Golani Brigade of the Israeli Defense Forces. And so, you know, by purchasing Sabra products, you are essentially boosting the profits that go and are donated to a division of the Israeli Defense Forces and therefore complicit in the occupation. So for this reason, many student groups have campaigned to get their universities to actually switch brands, to stop procuring Sabra and to providing other types of hummus. Finally, an easy target for boycott is wine that's produced in the settlements. There are quite a few companies that are located in the settlements. One of them is Basago, which you can get in Canada every once in a while. However, one thing to say about this is that the Israeli wine industry as a whole is quite complicit in the settlement enterprise for a variety of reasons, whether it's mixing grapes or where they get their water from. And so it actually becomes quite difficult, if not impossible, to make a clear distinction between settlement wine and Israeli wine that's not complicit in the settlements. So settlement wine is a good target, but Israeli wines as a whole is also worth boycotting. And on a side note, a federal Canadian judge a year or two ago actually ruled that these labels, and I'm not sure exactly what you can see, but there's this this label on Basago and other wines from the settlements that it says product of Israel. And a judge ruled that that was misleading and that they could no longer produce those labels. They'd have to indicate in some way that they're coming from occupied Palestinian territory in an illegal settlement. However, unfortunately, the Canadian government is actually going to court to appeal that ruling to defend the practice of labeling the settlement wine product of Israel, which I could talk about for a long time. It's really atrocious. Okay, so if you've decided that you're ready to launch a campaign, your own boycott campaign, here are a few tips to help you make an impact. First, you can make sure that you get all of the facts straight, that you have access to all the supporting facts, and that you can present them in a quick and compelling manner to those on your team, as well as those in the media, members of the public, and the company itself. Second, you need to provide the tools for people to be able to participate. This might include email campaigns or physical letters to give out to store managers or corporate leadership. CJPME also has a lot of resources, things like old letters to companies. And we can also provide BDS sticky notes, which I'll talk about later, which you can take with you to the store and to put onto products yourself, discouraging other consumers, telling them not to buy this product. Third, you need to make sure that you announce yourself. Send a letter, write an email. Simply put, they don't know that you're boycotting them unless you tell them. And so it's really important to make your protest count by being visible. Fourth, it's a good idea to suggest alternatives that someone could purchase instead of the targeted item. It's much easier for someone to participate in a boycott if they can easily switch to a different brand or a different product, if it doesn't require a significant personal sacrifice or change to one's livelihood. We also wanted to give you a couple of examples of recommended targets that we have provided resources for to help you in your efforts. So here we have our new graphic. Actually, this is an old version of the graphic, but the new one is going to be similar to this. We have gotten from Carlos Latouf, which is this great cartoonist, this new sticky note encouraging consumers not to purchase Pillsbury products and telling them that Pillsbury produces products in an illegal settlement. So this is something that in a few weeks we hope to have in our hands and be able to give out to people. Once we have them, we'll be sending out an email and you can sign up and we'll send you a free packet if you sign up. But we also have some more generic ones that you can put on any product. You could put it on Pillsbury, you could put it on Sabra or on SodaStream or a number of different products that warn people that these products are complicit in Israeli oppression, that they should choose alternatives. So yeah, we're really excited to roll this out in a few weeks. We highly recommend that if you do use a sticky note, that you take a picture of it and either post it on social media yourself and tag us so that we know about it, or you could even send us directly that photo and we can help share it on our platforms. Another thing that you could do to boycott Pillsbury and to be visible in doing so is that on our resource page, we have provided a letter that you can download and mail to General Mills Canada to tell them that you won't be purchasing Pillsbury products until Israel stops producing goods, until Pillsbury stops producing in an illegal settlement. Another thing that you could do right now is to take action against Elbit Systems. Now, this is not the same type of campaign as a consumer boycott, but what we're doing is urging Canada to refuse to purchase equipment from an Israeli company that is heavily complicit in human rights violations. In December, Canada announced a $36 million contract with Elbit Systems, Israel's major, biggest Israeli weapons company, for a drone, essentially to conduct surveillance in the Arctic. Unfortunately, this is a civilian version of the exact same drone that they use to monitor and to attack Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. And it was actually first developed and tested during the 2014 assault on Gaza and contributed to the deaths of many civilians. Therefore, we're encouraging the government to cancel this contract and not to be complicit in and boosting the profits of this company that is deeply complicit in violations of human rights. So there are two ways that you can take action. If you follow the link here or follow the link on our resource page, you can send an email to Minister Agraba asking him to cancel the Israeli drone contract. It only takes a minute to do. The second thing is you can send a letter to Minister Agraba. We've created a letter you can download from our website. And again, ask him to cancel the contract. We have to be able to find drones or equipment to do environmental monitoring that aren't complicit in violations of human rights. So I'll mention again, we have created a resource page that we'll email to everyone who registered. Perhaps Tom can put it in the chat if he hasn't already, where we've all of the resources I've mentioned today, all of the links will provide all of that in one place. Now, very briefly, I did want to touch on the parallel between the BDS movement and the South African anti-apartheid movement. So I'll do it quite quickly, but this is important because BDS takes direct inspiration from the South African anti-apartheid movement, which had also promoted the tactics of boycotts, divestment, and sanctions against South Africa. The boycott movement was launched in 1959 by the African National Congress, who saw the need to put international pressure on South Africa as a way to complement their own struggles against apartheid at home. And it's important to remember that not everyone was convinced of this right away. It actually took almost three decades before the boycott movement became popular and before students and labor groups and churches really began picking it up and adopting it. So it took a lot of effort, a lot of convincing in order to become popular, but eventually it did have an important impact. And one really interesting tactic in Canada was to promote South African wine. And I wanted to show these pamphlets. This is from my own archival research. But these are pamphlets distributed in the early 1980s from the group Canadians Concerned About South Africa for the purpose of trying to persuade Canadians not to purchase South African wine. And you can actually see a huge list of endorsers from civil society, of groups across Canada, a lot of churches, a lot of unions, a lot of community groups who endorse this call that we shouldn't be buying South African wine so long as apartheid was still the law of the land. I think this is interesting because it draws a direct parallel with what we're doing right now and the impact that we're trying to create. The boycott was not just something that was done by individuals, but in fact, eventually a number of provincial governments also came on board, and they took action to force provincial liquor companies either to ban the sale of South African wine or to maybe to stop featuring it or to hide it under a counter so it's not easily accessible. And so over time, through the boycott and divestment action of regular Canadians, provinces took action to do something in their jurisdiction. And this all had a cumulative effect of putting pressure on governments to impose sanctions, which they eventually did, which did have an impact on South Africa and helped to convince South Africa that it wasn't worth the cost of apartheid and that it was better off dismantling its apartheid system and extending democracy to everyone. So this is a movement that that our movement today builds upon, and we hope to replicate some of their successes. And we're hoping to play our own role in bringing an end to apartheid today. So that's the end of my presentation. And now I saw a lot of questions coming in. So hopefully we can have a really good Q&A session here. Tom, have you been monitoring the comments?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks first of all to Michael and Olivia, really some great information there and great back and forth. And all right, another question here that we had is about the Canadian government. Someone's asking whether there's any concern that the Canadian government would somehow equate BDS to anti-Semitism in some form. Michael, why don't I throw that to you to start with?
Well, they've already been doing that to an extent. We've seen comments from Justin Trudeau that sound very much like comments that Stephen Harper used to make, equating a boycott of Israel or comparisons between Israel and South Africa as saying that this is anti-Semitic. And it's really unfortunate because this tactic of trying to, there is no response, right, to the call from Palestinians. Canada has done so much to align itself so closely to Israel that it has nothing to say when you show people that injustices are being faced by Palestinians, and it's not willing to do anything about it. And so sort of the last thing that you can draw on is to try to find a way to delegitimize the other argument. And what people have found is that it's very effective to say that that BDS, for example, is anti-Semitic, completely ignoring that the whole point of BDS is that it's a call from Palestinians who live under occupation and under oppression, and that it's such a simple thing that people can do a nonviolent way to show that this isn't okay. And that's all that this is. And so I think it's really disheartening to see it, but I do think that the more people participate and speak up, the less it becomes stigmatizing. And Olivia's right, I don't think it's working as much as it used to. I don't think people are as afraid to talk about these issues. But I think it become less and less toxic the more that civil society groups raise their voice. I think it's great to see lots of unions engaged in really good advocacy and a few churches. And I think it'd be great if political parties did as well. So there's a lot you can say about this, but I think it's trying not to be discouraged by these attacks, but people rely on them because there's nothing else that they can say.
I was just going to add quickly to that. Yes, it is possible that the Canadian government will try and pass those kinds of laws. Germany and France have passed very draconian anti-BDS laws. The EU Court of Human Rights actually recently ruled against France's decision to criminalize BDS activists. Here in the US, I believe in Arkansas, an anti-BDS law that they had for the state just got overturned, ruled unconstitutional. So we expect that to happen in other states as well. So as much as there are these laws against BDS, there are, you know, these functions that will overturn them, hopefully in the future.
Thank you. Yeah, and just to be clear, there is no law passed in Canada against BDS. You can say anything you want about BDS currently. There's no issue. As Olivia pointed out, somebody might try to do that, but we do have a constitution which protects freedom of expression. So I think just as in these cases that Olivia has mentioned, I think that the same thing would happen in Canada if they went that way.
I might just add to that. There's been no law. One thing that people might see a lot is a IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which is being adopted by governments. This is a major threat to speech about what people can say about Israel, because it does conflate criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. But that too, it's not a law that can, it doesn't censor anyone. We're still allowed to say things. I think there are chilling effects it can have, but to date, there's nothing to preventing you from engaging in boycotts. There's nothing deeming BDS to be anti-Semitic by law.
Here's a question I'll pass to Olivia. Olivia, does the Palestinian Authority support the BDS movement?
I don't know the answer to that. As I mentioned before, the coalition of Palestinian political parties has a seat in the BNC, but It's my understanding that the BNC very purposely has no institutional relationship with any of the political parties, with the PA. So I actually don't know the answer to that fully.
I guess there have been sort of strange signals from various representatives of the PA. So yeah, I think to Olivia's point, it's hard to know. Here's a question for either of you. This person is asking whether the Beit Salem report calling Israel's regime an apartheid regime, whether that's had any sort of impact on BDS, presumably positive or negative.
Yeah, I think it was really great that this report came out and has gotten so much attention. At the same time, I think it's very frustrating for Palestinians who have been saying for decades that Israel is an apartheid state, you know, and get ignored. And now an Israeli organization says it, and it gets a lot of coverage. It's a frustrating situation, but of course, any coverage, any mainstreaming of Israel as an apartheid state is advantageous to BDS campaigning and helping people to understand the situation. So I think, yes, it will have a positive impact on BDS campaigning.
There's a few questions about sort of how BDS sort of fits in with the broader sort of goals of the Palestinian Solidarity Movement, or the goals of the Palestinian people overall. Olivia, would you have any thoughts in terms of how BDS fits in with sort of some of the broader struggles or some of the concurrent struggles of the Palestinian people?
Yeah, I mean, BDS does have very clear goals. You know, BDS, I think I saw someone mention BDS is not a goal. Correct. BDS is a tactic, it's a strategy, set of tactics to achieve specific goals. And I think Michael mentioned them at the beginning, which are to have Israel end its occupation and colonization of all Arab lands and dismantling the wall. Number two is recognizing the fundamental rights of all Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality. And number three is recognizing the right of return for all Palestinian refugees. So those are the goals of the BDS movement. There might be different factions and groups within Palestine and in the diaspora that have different goals and different visions. The BDS movement very intentionally does not take a position on like a one state or a two state solution. That's really beyond the mandate of the BDS movement. We're focused on those three specific goals, and that's what we're aiming to achieve with BDS.
We're getting a few comments about, one person saying they don't really have much to divest from. And so a few comments about sort of companies to target, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mentioned a few earlier. I think Pillsbury, things like Pillsbury and Sabra are really good targets because they're things that you see in the supermarket all the time. And they're things that have alternatives. Usually, if you want hummus, you don't have to buy Sabra. There's a generic brand as well. Although, you know, sometimes that's not true. Pillsbury is not something that you need. You need to have Pillsbury products. Everyone knows what it is, but it's not something that would require a huge sacrifice from someone.
Yeah, I just want to add, I think something important to remember is that BDS is really more about collective action rather than individual action. So more important than, you know, keeping your own investments clean or your own purchases and your consciences clean is working within groups or coalitions to really organize effective campaigns, really picking a specific target to build power around that. So there's actually no official BDS list. I'll often see these lists going around like, you individually should boycott these 100 companies. There are so many companies that are complicit. And that's fine if you on an individual level want to do that, but that's not going to be as effective as a sort of collective action. So a group that picks one target and wins that campaign on an organizational or institutional level. I also saw a couple questions in the chat asking about the UN list, and I can share a link to that in the chat. But General Mills is on this database that the UN published of 112 companies that are complicit in the settlements. And General Mills operates the Pillsbury factory. as was mentioned. So that's a really great target. And that list is a really great starting point to bring to the institutional level. I think that the UN really gives it this sort of institutional legitimacy that we need to say, you know, you should really divest from these companies. So that's a good starting point.
I don't know, Michael and Olivia, are there any questions that you're sort of eyeing on the list there that you'd like to address directly yourself?
I saw that someone asked about PACB and to explain PACB. So I'm happy to talk about PACB stands for the Palestinian Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. I think that cultural and academic boycotts are very effective, but often very misunderstood parts of BDS. They are not boycotts of individual Israeli academics, individual Israeli performers. You know, they're not calling for a boycott of people just because they're Israeli. These boycotts target institutions that are connected to Israeli apartheid. So Israeli academic and state cultural institutions are very much part of Israel's system of oppression. For example, there are many Israeli performers that are like explicitly designated to serve as ambassadors of the state to project an image of Israel as a beacon of artistic freedom and democracy. So for example, if an independent Israeli film is shown at a film festival, it does not automatically fall under the BDS call. But if a film festival is sponsored by the Israeli Ministry of Culture, which is aggressively involved in Israeli apartheid, then the festival should be pressured to end that partnership. And if they're not responsive to that, then yeah, the festival should be boycotted. I think, you know, as Michael knows and has talked about, as seen in the case of South Africa, boycotting institutions has a lot more power than partnering with these cultural and academic representatives of an oppressive regime to try and, you know, persuade them and engage in the marketplace of ideas. You know, that doesn't do anything to sort of neutralize the very substantial harm that comes from Israel bragging about these partnerships to kind of, you know, promote its image in the international community. And there are a lot of really great resources on our website, bdsmovement.net, that you can learn more about the cultural and academic boycott and PACB.
Thank you, Olivia. Yeah, excellent question and very, very, very complete response. Thank you. Why not, any final word before we close out? Olivia, do you want to say any final thing you want to say to our very invested and passionate audience here tonight?
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, we've talked a little bit about how the movement is growing and how more politicians are speaking out. And that's because of you all. You know, I would say continue to do what you're doing and get involved in these campaigns as much as possible, because it's working.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've been a great audience, everyone. Really appreciate everyone's participation. Your questions were really right on point. And thank you very much for being part of this evening. Thanks again to Michael and Olivia, and have a good night. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So that's it for us for today. You are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine.
Time to make an appointment for your booster dose against COVID-19. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence plan for your area and book your appointment online. To continue protecting yourself against COVID-19 and its variants, get a booster dose and keep following distancing measures, wearing a mask, and washing your hands. The booster dose, the best way to stay protected longer. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.